You're listening to Sci-Fi For Me Radio.
Spoilers.
It's a new year for sci-fi for chicks, but has Gotham turned a new leaf? We'll find out in this episode. It's all in the game.
I want to say I'm sorry.
Forget about it. It's okay. Apology accepted.
Thank you.
Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in the wonderful game.
That was It's All in the Game from the end of the episode, as sung by Tommy Edwards. Yes, I am starting our episode, our first episode of the new year. At the end of the episode, Alex, did you think we would be back to Gotham so soon?
Honestly, no. I was prepared for it to premiere, I don't know, maybe at the end of January sometime. And the information that it's back January 5th was like, what? What? What happened to the month and a half that we thought we had?
Oh, it was not so much of a break for us. Hi, and welcome back to Sci-Fi for Chicks. I'm Heather, and across the digital divide is my good friend Alex. And we're wondering why the heck we're back already. We wanted more time. We were supposed to do a whole look back on the first half of the season, and we had all these plans.
Yeah, that didn't work out. But still, yeah. We hope you missed us.
You better have missed us.
Yeah, we're the cool kids. Hello. Didn't you get the memo? I sent that memo. I signed it and triple underlined it.
Yeah, it must have gotten lost in the mail. Santa and all that kind of fun stuff. I got to talk to those elves. And remember, we always have technical difficulties. So I guess maybe this is our technical difficulty for the new year.
Mm.
Is that Fox didn't check with us on the scheduling.
Yeah.
And just
seriously,
they're
so inconsiderate. Like,
they really are. They could have told us when we were signing off when it was. I looked everywhere for the return dates, couldn't find anything. Thank goodness On Demand let us know so that we could check ahead of time. Okay, well, we're here, and so let's go ahead and get to it with Gotham Season 1, Episode 11, Rogues Gallery, or as I'm calling it, It's All in the Game, which is what this episode felt like to me, one big game, with all the players making a move, some forward, some backward, some sideways. I don't know if we really gained any ground, but what did you think of the episode overall?
Overall, I liked it. There were some moments that I didn't like, which I will explain and tell you all about it in great detail later on. So, you know, be ready for that. But overall, I was like, oh, Gotham is back. And there were moments when I couldn't wipe the grin off my face because Gotham is back. And it's just like I remembered it and the characters did what I wanted them to do. But then characters did not do what I wanted them to do, so that was less pleasant. But yeah, I missed it. I missed it. I almost forgot how I enjoyed Gotham in these past several episodes that we had before the break.
I think that having that break did help in forgetting some of, or putting distance between us and some of the things that were really grating on us from the first half of the season. I even watched a special thing with some of the creators and producers, and they were talking about the villains, and they were talking about how they've created some of these new ones, you know, like some villains that just really didn't get off the ground. Ha ha ha, pardon the pun. And they're like pointing to Balloon Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, really? Really? You're going to focus on somebody like Balloon Man when you're talking about the villains of Gotham? Someone that we just really could not abide with.
Yeah,
before.
We had serious problems with that guy.
Oh, major. And I'm really sorry that I watched that. Luckily, I watched it after I watched the episode, because it reminded me of all the stuff that was irritating me. Because starting to watch this episode, it felt like that month had passed, because I did make a reference to Jim. You know, there's been, as you know, like four, what do they say, like four inmates had been hurt. You know, that's in as many weeks. So it's been a month. They're doing actual time. They've been off for a month. So it's been a month. And it feels like all the characters have... Well, at least Jim and Bullock and some of those have really settled in a little bit more. Because Jim was smiling. Jim was laughing. Jim was... He seemed more comfortable in his own skin. And I liked seeing that. Because there's so many times in the first half of the season that he didn't seem comfortable in his own skin. So that was really good to see. Even if he is in that uniform.
Mm.
At Arkham.
What I noticed after I finished the episode was the fact that there was no Bruce. Like, since the beginning of the show, every episode we got a scene with young Master Bruce, right?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, and this was the first episode that I was like, hey, wait, what? Where is Bruce? I mean... He's the Batman to be, so hello.
Well, we did have a setup, because I did want to look this up again. For those of you that maybe are just joining us, Alex and I are not proficient in the entire universe here, or the DC universe going on.
As in,
way
we
back
have not read the comics.
So usually when I watch these episodes afterwards, now I'm like, okay, I've got to go to trusty wiki. Is this a character? Is this a new character? Or is this something that they've taken from the comics? And when we saw Morena Baccarin come on, who I love, she's first off stunningly beautiful. I hate her, but I love her in pretty much anything I've seen her in, whether you've seen her in
yeah,
Serenity.
Her character
is
from the comics. I've read that somewhere.
Yeah, whether she's in like in Homeland or Serenity or even V, if anybody saw V, which was horrendous, but she was awesome in it. So I'm like, I had to look her up. And yeah, she is, from what they said, a close friend and medical colleague of Thomas Wayne, so Bruce's father. And in the comics, I guess she serves as a surrogate parental figure to Bruce after his parents are murdered. So we're going to have her connection in there with him. It does also say that in the comics, she has been linked romantically to Alfred on more than one occasion.
Oh, Alfred totally, this version of Alfred totally deserves to top that, I am telling you. he has earned the right to get his flirt on.
I think so, yeah, definitely, I could see it. Now, if this were like the Michael Caine Alfred, I'd be like, nah, it's just kind of creepy. But
no,
let's
not go there, but this Alfred?
I could see this one,
yeah. He is totally allowed to, you know, get some. Now, oh my god, now I will be shipping them, and I will... I hate you.
And
you are a terrible
human
being.
Well, I'm hoping that they do go that way. I am. I'm a terrible human. I hope they go that way, because the way it's initially set up, you're like, oh, are we going to do some sort of love quadrangle thingy again with Jim and Barbara and Montoya and now Leslie, which, you know, how is this going to happen? And I'm like, okay, well, maybe they're going to become confidants because of the whole Jim and Bruce thing, and she'll get close to Bruce as well, and then she'll get close to Alfred, and that'll give some more fun Sean Pertwee scenes. I'd love to see that. So here's hoping.
That's going to be precious. I really hope they go that way.
You should see the look on Alex's face. She's in her hashtag shiny happy place there.
It's going to be brilliant. But that's,
you know, she was a little lonely. You were a little lonely in your shiny happy place because it was just you and all these hot men. Well, now you could have like another couple there that you could double date with, you know.
Oh, I have hot women in my shiny happy place, just not from the shows that we talk about.
So, speaking though of her character, what did you think of her character, the whole thing with Jim at Arkham, that whole... Let's go ahead and start with the A story that isn't an A story, because there aren't A and B stories in the show, we've already pretty much determined.
Yeah.
But the whole Jim at Arkham and the inmates and her with her introduction and discovering things. What did you think of all of that?
I don't know. I took in all the whole Arkham thing and watched what they showed and looked at the characters, but I don't really have strong feelings about it. I'm like, meh, Okay, it's a part of the story that Jim has to go through, and I intellectually understand it, but I don't care. I don't... Mm-hmm. It's like, to quote Luke from Gilmore Girls, I don't know, and I don't care. So, the only guy that I cared about was the main baddie. Spoiler alert. Christopher H. something, with the name that I cannot even begin to try to pronounce. But he was a villain in every single thing that I watched and loved. He was Todd on Stargate Atlantis. He was John Druitt on Sanctuary. He has this presence that is so absolutely amazing. And the moment I saw him on the stage, I was like, oh my God, I love you. I love you. Please don't go away. Please stay there as long as Jim is in Arkham, because, oh my God, I love you. And I knew that he would have a major role, because mm-hmm. you do not hire Christopher for something minor. You just don't, because he is amazing. He is a god among villains. And you just don't.
He's like that Christoph Waltz kind of thing, where I know Christoph Waltz can do non-bad guy things, but he does bad guys so perfectly. How do you not have him and utilize him for that?
Because exactly.
He just does it so beautifully.
And the moment I knew that his character was a sociopath, I was just, yes, give me more, because this is going to be glorious. And it was. And it was, mm-hmm. and the fact that he drove off into the sunrise, because that's how you do things in Gotham. I just knew I cannot wait to see him again on Gotham, because he has to come back. He has to, and I will go on strike if he doesn't. But oh my god, and that was the part that I was really extremely excited about. Everything else, whatever. But him being there, it was like, why, thank you, Santa. I was a very naughty girl last year, and I deserve all the presents. So, thank you. I'm just saying.
He was... It was one of those, when you saw him, really? You're not going, hey, he's a bad guy just by his look and his voice and how he's acting, that he's the one that you need to be worried about? You're worried about all these other people? It was one of those things that it was very obvious that they were setting him up to be the bad guy, but that
care.
I'm okay with it, because he's awesome. But it was just, again, one of those things that it reminded me a little bit of Balloon Man, but I didn't mind as much, in that everything that we were going through, you knew was a setup for the end. You knew it was none of what we were going through at Arkham really mattered, other than to introduce Leslie and to introduce Jack Gruber, who, if you go and look him up, you come up with a musician. His name is new to the whole Gotham Batman universe that I can see, although he could be one of the electrified villains that Batman deals with. But from what I can see, he's not anywhere else in there. And it's Christopher Heyerdahl.
Yeah,
Christopher Heyerdahl.
But my point is,
it's our Dylan Bruce thing, so, that's...
Yeah, unlike Balloon Man, though, I knew that what we would end up with was him and the nurse, who, plot twist, shocker, wasn't a nurse, didn't see that one coming. But the thing was, I didn't care, because... Yeah. Unlike with Balloon Man, they provided me with characters that I was... I was this close to actually wedding myself to this. Oh my god, this is so awesome.
TMI.
Yeah, I didn't care, because I didn't care. Give me a, predictable, simple plot. I won't care, because you give me Christopher, you give me the crazy not nurse, you give me Bullock, who sees Jim and discards the director, Doctor, immediately, just so he can hug Jim. And I was like, oh my god, that was exactly what I hoped you would do.
I liked, like I said, I didn't mind it. It wasn't like in Balloon Man, when I'm like, oh my god, every second I'm like, really? This I didn't mind. It was an obvious setup for everything. Alice Beasley, you don't use Alice Beasley and not have her be something. She's not just a background kind of thing. You know, Alice Beasley is very well-known character actress. And so you knew that that was more than what you were seeing. I have to admit, I was flashing a little bit to Sleepy Hollow and Mama. Because I was like, is she really there? Oh, wait, wrong show. She's not a ghost. Yes. But I knew, she was somebody bad. I didn't mind it. It was fun seeing Jim interact in Arkham with the, like I said, he loosened up. It, almost putting that uniform on him made him loosen up a little bit more and not take himself so seriously. And then, like you said, that moment when Bullock comes out there and just pushes by, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're such a great buddy cop team now. Bullock is giddy seeing it. I just flash back to how Bullock was that first episode.
Yes.
When he gets Jim as a new partner and how he is now. I'm just, it's adorable. I didn't know that I could love Donald Logue any more than I already have. But wait, that sounds bad. Than I already do. Yeah, that's a little bit better. But it was just a glorious moment. And seeing Jim also, because before, you know, if it's just Bullock, Jim, and Jim's kind of pushing him off and all this, but Jim's loving it too and breaking it. It's like, oh, it's my buddy Bullock. And, you know, they both are now counting on each other. And that's what I think we needed, because they were so separate. And Jim was just so serious all the time. And it's nice to see him not be so serious.
You know how romantic ships and fans usually call them their OTPs, their one true pairing? Well, Bullock and Jim are my bro-TP. It's like the best friendship ever. And when I saw them together, it was like, yes, come on, go solve this. I did not, from all the characters that we've been introduced to, I did not expect that there would be a time in my life where I would call Jim and Bullock adorable. But they were. They were in this episode, in that particular scene. It was like, rewind. Because that was precious.
And it's another shot of Bullock really having Jim's back. I love that you can now see that they don't have each other's back just because they have to, because they're partners. There's a reason that they have each other's back. And it even played into when we come back to the station and you see Essen, our
captain,
police chief, captain. She's even laughing, and I want to get you back. And it's like, okay, we're starting to see the police now having a team, even though we know we have the police that are still totally under the Don's umbrellas there, with the ones that we see that end up taking Penguin in, which we'll get to in a minute, because I know we both have feels on that one. But we know we have that with the police, but we're starting to see the police come together as the start of the good Gotham police. Mm-hmm. And they all seem to like each other, and that made me also excited, because maybe Essen will finally have some purpose in the story, other than just to be written there.
Wasn't just me, or did it feel slightly like a little bit of a different show this week, and this episode in particular? Because we got used to this dark and gritty and terribly sad and depressing world full of, you know, corrupt cops and everything working against the protagonist. And here, even though technically the case of the week was still serious and somewhat gruesome, it felt like the entire the whole show, the whole episode was lighter and, you know, more fun and less of a depressing, oh my god, let's kill ourselves because this is enough. So, and I don't know what made the writers and producers do that. Because I was like, am I watching the same show I was before the break? Like, when did it change? Did it change without me noticing? Or am I noticing for the first time? I got a little, you know, it threw me for a while. I appreciated all the lightness and jokes and laughter. But when I thought about it more, it was like, huh. This is new. And was it just me?
It was not you, because I definitely felt that too. And I don't know if it was helped by the fact that we did have that month off. And we're just coming off of our own Christmas, New Year's, Happy New Year, listeners, by the way, kind of high or festivities or whatever. And then you start right in with this play that they're doing in the asylum, which I'm like, is this really a good idea? So you already have this fantastical within this fantastical, and Jim is out of his gritty street element. He's in this, you know, your typical asylum-y, horrendous hellhole kind of a place. I don't know what it was, but yeah, it was definitely a different tone, a different feeling, a different... And you still had some of the same elements that you're going to have in the episodes that we've seen before, that we're going to talk about later, with like Fish and Barbara and Montoya and Cat and Penguin. Mm-hmm. We still have all of these, because, I mean, this episode, you know, is called Rogue's Gallery. So that's what they're laying everybody out. I mean, there was, like you said, with the exception of Bruce, you know, who we only have that tenuous line there, this was a layout of all of that. So you would think it would have been a heavier episode, but no, it really was about those moments, Jim and Bullet hugging each other and happy, touchy-feely kind of things almost. It had a different feel. And so I don't know if it's something they're going to keep going with,
mm-hmm.
or if we're going to suddenly be juxtaposed back into the darkness that we've had, or if it's just because we're in Arkham. I don't know. Maybe since we're in this criminally insane place, maybe we're supposed to be thrown off. I don't know.
I'm willing to wait and see where they go with it. Definitely. They left us on such a high note with the episodes before the break. And okay, I will give you that lighter episode, especially since it was so delicious and amazing and awesome and full of characters.
I love how we're calling it a lighter episode when we have like these murders and there's like electroshock therapy, you know, people are... brains are being fried and kids are freezing on the street. You know, you do the quick little tie on this, and it's like, really, this is the happy episode?
This is the standards that Gotham set for us. So yes, this is a lighter episode. It was like almost a comedy hour. So, you know.
It's true. But they're still staying, I think, really great, wonderfully true, even as they're moving these characters forward to the basics of these characters. I love that moment when the three of them are in the captain's office.
Mm-hmm.
Or the chief's office, no, because it's Captain Irving. So he's the captain, she's the chief. And Jim
I'm okay
will be
with
the
that.
Commissioner. So she's the cat. So we're in the chief's office, and they're all sitting around, and they realize that, oh my gosh, it's the nurse. And, you know, after they've been having this drink, and they're all running out the door, and Love Bullock is like, I'm not wasting this whiskey. This is good stuff. So he like shoots the whiskey. These little moments that just, it made me laugh because it's so Bullock. And even other things like Bullock with Penguin. Well, let's go ahead and get into some. I know we both have feels on this. Let's get into some of that there. You know, Bullock, the whole Bullock and Penguin thing, the Penguin on the docks thinking he's hot stuff, the police.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, I do not have a rant about Penguin. I feel like we ranted about him enough. Come
on.
We've
done this rant
before. Yeah, we've done this rant before where he takes a step forward and then two steps back because, yeah, they hurried that one. But at least this time, it was something that a different character used to make a point. It wasn't Penguin failing mm-hmm. at, you know, crime life, as he did so many times before in past episodes. This time, it had a purpose, and it was a purpose designed not by writers, well, by writers, but by another character. Mm-hmm. It was Moroni trying to, you know, teach Penguin that he might think he's hot stuff, but it's Moroni who's in charge. And let's remember that, Penguin. So I liked the end of that particular storyline. Because at first when I saw Penguin at the docks and I was like, oh my god, not this again. Come on, didn't you have this reaction? It was like, oh yeah, I know this. This is Penguin taking two steps back like he did so many times before because apparently he doesn't learn. Mm-hmm. But this time it you know, it had a purpose. It wasn't the writers going, oh no, we can't have him advance too far, too fast. It was another character doing, yeah, let's not have him think he's better than he is.
Yeah.
Now, this had a purpose, and I was okay with it. All the other times in the past, that I was not okay with, because that was writers failing at writing. And this I was okay with. So, plus, you know, Bullock gave me one of the best lines that I will now use, and I already used in our pre-show chat. I find looking at you soothing, like a bonsai tree.
That was great.
That's me and Mockery. Not exactly Penguin, but still, you know. Ah, Bullock.
I liked that moment because it was... I think it was a good moment if you think about it, like even pull it out. It was the cops feeling like they had were above the villains there in this moment, that they, you know, they're not playing to them. He wasn't bowing to Penguin, or the Penguin, yeah, as he wanted to be called now.
Yes, the Penguin.
The Penguin. Whatever. Please. That's something that I think is also very, very American, because we like our articles A and V. You Europeans. Yeah, it's not as specific, right? But I liked that Bullock did feel that he's above. He's moving beyond just placating the Dons and everything so that he can just keep going by. He's like, okay, I'm ready to be a cop. And it was a great funny moment. I do see your point. It was kind of necessary. I think it's also, in a way, necessary to solidify Penguin with Maroni. So Maroni's having the wool pulled over his eyes even more. He really does think that Penguin is on his team. So I think it's showing that Maroni's not really looking at that picture of Falcone. He really thinks that Penguin is on his team now. At least from what I got.
Yeah.
I was just sad to see in an episode called The Rogues Gallery, you know, Penguin being basically so cocky and stupid and not really thinking ahead and getting beaten up yet again.
Yeah, it was like, oh yes, this is something new. We haven't seen that before at all. Like, can you hear my sarcasm and lack of amusement at this development?
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever. I'm slowly beginning to not care about Penguin's two-step back problem. Because I was annoyed that this genius character was, you know, being pulled back and the writers were making so many mistakes with him. And I find that 11 episodes in? 11? No,
yeah,
wait.
11. How many? 11.
Yeah, 11. 11 episodes in, I no longer care. Yeah, okay, let's, you know, pull back Penguin once again. Oh, joy, it's so new. So, I'm afraid that I'm not the only one. So, it kind of feels like a waste where the writers had such an amazing character with so much potential, mm-hmm, and they are wasting it away, because if I'm starting to get bored with this dance that they have Penguin in,
mm-hmm,
I can't be the only one.
You're not.
So it's a pity.
Yeah, because he's Robin Lord Taylor is playing him so beautifully, but yeah, some of the things getting it just makes me sad, because I think he's really showing what Penguin really can be, and it's almost like they got him there too quick in some aspects and have to keep pulling him back. So
exactly.
He's like a dog on a leash where he just like runs ahead and you're like, nope, sorry, come back here. You're supposed to be walking beside me, not way out
ahead.
Yeah,
and yanking him back. It's painful to watch, basically.
Mm-hmm. It really is. With that dog analogy, going to the other side, the one that I think is progressing quite nicely is our cat, because she is moving along at her own pace, and she's, mm-hmm, just stepping forward. She's putting her paw into the story when it suits her. I really like these little moments with Kat and Ivy, with her finding her, mm-hmm, and taking her to Barbara and Jim's place, and which helped me more, because I know one problem we had at the beginning of the season was Ivy had one of the posters that they were promoting the season with, and we've seen her twice, and both of them were really pretty quick. Her being a little psycho when Kat and Bruce were on the run was her big scene, and we're like, really? She gets a full poster? And so now I'm seeing, well, maybe we are pulling her in a little bit more, and we're connecting her to somebody with Kat, and Kat showing her, yeah, I don't care. Wait, are you sick? No, come on. Let me go take care of you. And I thought it was, again, just those little Kat steps. She's not lunging forward like Penguin. She's taking these little steps forward.
Plus, we still saw a little psycho Ivy when she answered the phone. It was like, you're not, oh my God, yes, she is. And it was delicious. It was delicious because she didn't do it for any other reason, just to be mean.
Definitely.
And that I found refreshing, because I don't think she knew what apartment she was in.
I was going to ask you if you thought she did or not.
No, I think she didn't know whose apartment she was in until Barbara asked for Jim Gordon.
Right.
Then I think Ivy connected the dots, and not before. But I don't think it mattered whose apartment she was in, because she already answered the phone with that voice.
Mm-hmm. She was already being malicious, right? Kind of thing, but got even worse after she found out.
And I think she got more pleasure from it once she knew whose life she was screwing with. But it didn't matter as she was answering the phone. Mm-hmm. So we still saw a little glimpse of the psycho that she is, and she will be in the future. Oh my God. I can't wait for her to grow up.
Yeah, they are definitely setting her up to really be off kilter and just not a full deck. Yeah, just she's really in her own little thing. Of course, I do have to say, my little technical thing. I'm like, well, that's a cordless phone and it's not on a charger. So why is it sitting right there? Because the battery would be dead if Jim had just left it there, or if Barbara had left. Sorry, that was my little reality moment where I'm like, why would the phone be sitting
But it
there?
Only adds to the deliciousness of the situation, because what if she was the one who took the phone and put it there?
But why? I know, that's why. I just had to have my little moment of, well, what? That's just too convenient. Okay, now let's just go and enjoy the gloriousness. And at first when she picked it up, I'm like, oh, it's going to sound like a little girl. When we're on Barbara's end, I'm like, no, I guess it sounds old enough when she's on there, especially when she starts, like you said, when she hears that it's Jim Gordon's apartment. She not sexed it up enough, but you could tell she kind of slowed it down just a little bit more, so it sounds a little more deliberate and a little bit more little sex kitten kind of thing. She's going to be glorious and wonderful.
Oh, this is going to go in a direction I did not anticipate it, but I loved it. I loved it. It was creepy and slightly, you know, I'm going to step back from this character, and I'm not going to say anything mean about her, just in case.
Yeah, she's kind of like Lizzie on The Walking Dead. Or like,
Yeah, look at the flowers, Ivy.
Look at the flowers. Which I have to say, that actress, when I've seen her outside of that, she looks adorable. I've seen her in other things, and I'm like, you're adorable. And then she has this one look that she looks at, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Lizzie. I have a feeling it's going to be the same with this young woman too, that I'm going to see her in something else, and it's like, oh, you go, oh my gosh, you're Ivy. No, you're psycho. Okay, just you stay over there. I'm over here. I didn't do anything to your family.
Basically.
I'm okay. Yeah, she's playing creepy quite nicely.
They did an amazing job casting her. That for sure.
Yeah, and I think it helped, because we were definitely worried about it, worried about her early on, because it's like, she's supposed to be this baddie. And like we said, they're setting her up to be one of the posters for this season. Why, or you know, for the series? Why would you put her up there and then just do this throwaway treatment that she had at the beginning? Yeah. Did nothing. So I think we are setting up where, I don't know how much more we're going to learn in these next 11 episodes. I guess we're halfway through the season now, technically. But I have a feeling she's going to have something pretty big somewhere in this season, later on.
We'll see.
We'll see.
I think she's kind of something. I am excited about her. Because I like that they are bringing her back. And hopefully we will... I don't know if we need to see more of her with Kat. Or, you know, just on her own. Because they can't really advance her storyline too far away, right? Because she needs to get normal before she goes psycho again. Like, there's a way that Poison Ivy is created, made, becomes what she is in the Batman.
She's going to be kind of like the Harvey Dent character, where he seems nice and normal 1 minute, and then on a dime can just totally go psycho. She's got to get to that point. She's not at that point yet. I think we'll see her. I think we'll see something big with her this season. Not necessarily earth-shattering, but I think she's going to have another big scene. I think she kind of has to stay with Kat for a while until we figure out some other way that she can be connected into the story. It's kind of like if we didn't have that Jim and Bruce connection. If we didn't have that connection, why would we keep going back to Bruce when we're talking about gritty cop street villain stuff? Why would we go back to this rich kid? Yeah. So she's got to have some sort of connection. And right now, unless Penguin adopts her, adopts, but takes her in under his wing, or Fish or something, unless one of those people does that, I don't see any other reason to bring her into the story other than Kat. Kat having that tie to Jim, Kat having that tie to Bruce. Ivy's like the friend of their friend kind of thing right now. So it would be weird to see her with anybody else without Kat at this point. But she does need some other reason.
Well, we'll see.
So talking about her little manipulation, her little gleeful moment there, when she picks up the phone and she's talking to Barbara, let's move into Barbara and Montoya. We finally see Barbara again after this shocker end of episode. What was that, like two episodes ago, I guess, where she wakes up in Montoya's bed. Oh my gosh, that's the big shocker. Yeah, we saw it coming. Let's talk about Barbara and Montoya.
There are some developments with those two that I didn't see coming, and not in a good way. Shocking, didn't see it coming. But honestly, I have no idea where some of those stuff came from. Like, seriously.
Such as?
I get it that for a month since Jim was in Arkham, you know, working as a guard or whatever, she was with Montoya all that time.
So she's been with her a month, basically. Yeah. And obviously, since when they broke into the apartment and Kat's talking about that little sniff and the rotting food, Barbara hasn't been back to her apartment, so.
Yeah, neither have Jim, but.
Well, he's a guy.
I guess my point is, we enter this kind of relationship, let's call it that, and we are faced with certain truths or facts that we are supposed to accept, like Barbara's back on booze and drugs, like the pointed, you know, bottle of pills, and Montoya saying that the booze, the drugs, and I expected a little more foreplay, so to speak, with that. And because the last we've seen Barbara, I think, was that supposedly shocking scene with her and Montoya before the break, and then nothing, and then suddenly we're here and she already spiraled out and hit the bottom again. So I'm just like, I feel a little cheated, because if the writers used that storyline of Barbara falling off the wagon and going back to the bottle and the drugs to deal with the problems that she doesn't want to face, I would be okay with it as long as I got to watch it, I suppose. Because now that we're just it's been a month, boom, she's like this druggy, boozy woman who cannot face the facts and is arguing with Renee when Renee is trying to say, no, stop it, be like, we need to fix this and I can't help you, so let's find you help, even if it's Jim. And it's like, I feel like I entered a scenario, a movie, in the middle of it, and I feel kind of lost.
Yeah, me too. I really do.
I'm lost, and because of that, I'm disappointed. Because this is a storyline I expected. Mm-hmm. I knew that once they mentioned that Barbara had a problem, and that Montoya had a problem, right? They had a problem mm-hmm. together. I wanted it explored. But I wanted it explored and not just shoved in my face, like, and here's the final product. And I'm like, what?
It's one of those things, too, when I looked at, when I think back to the beginning of the season, and you see Barbara in the little bits that we saw of her, and projecting the strongness. Like, let's go back to the episode with when they were abducting the kids, and Jim tells her, and she instantly gets up and does the right thing and calls it in and calls for the tip and is standing strong and she's not scared. This was what I was thinking they were setting her up to be, was to be this stronger woman. She has these principles, morals, that's going to be hard for Jim to work around because she's not going to bend. This is the right thing to do, so we have to do it. That's kind of how they set her up. And then she has this trauma when she's abducted by Falcone's men with Victor Zsasz, who I will admit, very scary kind of a guy. I would be freaked out too. She is totally freaked out by this, does a total 180 change. I mean, this is, she stood up to everything. She even stood up to Renee and like, no, this is my life now. And this one thing that I admit is traumatic, but they showed it to us this once, and suddenly she is this broken, shattered woman from this experience. Her two relationships that we know about are both with law people, you know, a cop and another cop, you know, major crimes unit things. She's with two people who are surrounded by this danger all the time. For her to be so freaked out with no other explanation, we're not seeing anything with her. It just seemed so unrealistic at how traumatic this was, and for her to be so totally disillusioned with Jim that she leaves and goes to Renee for our big ooh shocker reveal. Like you said, she suddenly had this month decline that we don't see, and it just seems too convenient to the story. And I don't like it.
That's exactly the word that I didn't want to use, but it fits the situation. It's convenient. And by being convenient, it's so much less believable, because the audience needs to see it's not enough to have a broken character. For it to have an impact on the audience, you have to show the character break. And what we got with Barbara, that is so, so disappointing that I can't even. What we got with her was a before shot and after. Like, it was like a makeover that we didn't get to see, right? You get a before shot and after. Before, the strong, confident woman who has her principles and she will not bend. And apparently, by not bending, she breaks. And you get this after shot of her being completely out of control. And it's just... Can you hear the disappointment in my
song? Exactly. I mean, if that was enough... But, and I'm not saying it couldn't be, you know, if she's had drug and alcohol addiction problems, it doesn't take much to, it's not like you have to have 500 things that happen that make you fall off the wagon. It could be this one thing that is so traumatic. But if we had seen more of how it really affected her, then we did these little bits where every little noise is, she thinks it's that, and she's freaking out, and she's reaching, you know, even when she was with Jim, she was starting to reach for the bottle or something. Anything, if we had just seen some more to get her there. And this is one where I almost wish that they were doing webisode type things, like in between, you know, during the break, little things. Maybe if we'd seen those vignettes. I get that maybe it's not this ooh-ah story that you want to do a whole episode on right in the middle when you're building this up and it's the holidays and we want to get to Jim being at Arkham and not have to worry about showing Jim at Arkham for a month. But we need to see more of her for me to believe that she's been with Renee this whole time, that she's gone down this rabbit hole and that, you know, and also made me kind of question Renee a little bit too, because she's been with her a month and Renee's let her go down this rabbit hole.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I'm like, okay, it's not like this is new that you don't know what this is. You've been there before, too. I like that she stood up and said, you know, this is toxic to me as well, and, you know, got to get you help and all this. But wouldn't you have seen, wouldn't there have been something that you could have done during this time? It doesn't feel like Renee's been on her this whole month to try and do it. You know, hey, now you're really bad. I'm like, no, I think if Renee cared about her this, because it went from Renee wanting Barbara back, she's got her. And now, you know, we don't see any of them together in this month. So mm-hmm. suddenly she's like, okay, well, yeah, I got you. I don't want you anymore because you're toxic. And I'm just like, okay, this is just such a shift. It's just very unsettling.
Unlike us, she saw it yeah. coming. She, I cannot believe that when you're in a relationship with somebody, you don't see them stumble mm-hmm. and fall. And, you know, those pills were in plain sight when we saw them first in this episode. Mm-hmm. They were on a nightstand, right? So there is no way in hell that Barbara was falling into this, you know, spiral of drugs and abuse and booze without Renee noticing.
Exactly. And Renee so being on guard, like, too, because Renee could fall down this rabbit hole herself and with the temptation there. I mean, I know the bottle was placed there for the audience. Hey, by the way, in the last month, this is what Barbara's been doing. But like you said, it's not like it's just for us. It's not like Barbara grabbed it and then was hiding it when Renee came in. It's there for Renee to
exactly.
see.
Exactly. So you gotta wonder, because we, in the first half of the season, they were portrayed in a way that made me feel like Renee was still in love mm-hmm. with Barbara, but Barbara has moved mm-hmm. on, right? And now suddenly it's like Renee had moved on. During the month that she was in a relationship mm-hmm. with Barbara, she managed to move on somehow. And Barbara is now using Renee as I don't even know what, because apparently she can be a drunk and a junkie with Montoya, but she can't be that with Jim, and it leaves me confused and irritated and frustrated with the development, and I want them to fix yeah. it, like, stat. Yeah.
I mean, I understand that when you're in that kind of a situation, things might not be super rational, but how irrational she got when Ivy is taunting her. Okay, Barbara, you left Jim, and it's been a month, and you're with Renee, so why are you getting so upset of the idea that Jim might have somebody else there? You know, excuse me, totally yeah. justified.
You're allowed to move on, but he yeah. isn't? That. So, yeah, I don't like where her character is going. She had so much potential, and I know that we talked about her numerous times during our podcasts, how we loved her and wanted to see more of her, but if this is what we get, yeah, no thanks, but no thanks. Basically.
They need to figure her out, because it really seems like Montoya and Barbara are put in there for almost the shock value that they're not delivering us. I'm getting irritated by what they put them in there for. I like Renee. When we have her as the cop, I like her there. And I liked her mm-hmm. personal interaction with Jim. I'm not liking this Barbara-Montoya thing, because it's just convenient. Everything is convenient for the story that they want. Well, okay, well, we want them to be at this point in the story, so we'll just do this and we'll throw it in.
It's one of my pet peeves. It's lazy yeah, writing. That's what it is.
Stereotypical.
And it's
lazy.
Disappointing that somebody... Yeah, it's lazy and stereotypical. And it's frustrating to know that someone somewhere got paid for this. It was like, what?
Exactly. When we're not getting paid for that,
I want my money
back,
write it. Basically.
Pay us, we'll help you.
I could write it better. Hell, I wouldn't even charge them for allowing me to fix this, because I don't know who wrote this episode and how much of the showrunner had told them to put in, but this is not what I signed up for. It's lazy, it's disappointing, and if they don't fix it, I will not be happy, and you will hear me rant again.
It's most definitely. Here's where I'm going to using one of your phrases, give the writers the benefit of the doubt, but only because they got six episodes added to this season from what they had previously, and we were wondering how that was going to mess with their story arc for the first season with the baddies. Maybe somebody along the way will realize that in that time they can fix what they've broken with Montoya and Barbara, and especially Barbara, because Barbara needs the help. Okay, let's move on to a female character that we generally like and who made her Rogues Gallery little cameo. It wasn't much, but we, you know, call it Rogues Gallery. We got to talk about her. So let's go talk about Fish and Butch and what's his name? I have to be honest. I don't know who that was.
I don't know, and I don't care. But I got to tell you, Heather, I was watching those scenes with like, oh my God, please, Butch, do not break my heart. Do not break my heart. Do not betray Fish. Because that, I gotta tell you, this would break my heart more than anything else in this episode or on this show so far. Because, come on, Butch has been such an amazing minion through this entire thing. Like, offering to hold Fish's purse, or was it shoes, when she would be beating somebody up or, you know, doing evil stuff. He was so amazing. And this episode, I was like, no, Butch, do not do this to me. Do not do this to Fish, but most importantly, do not do this to me.
Exactly.
Do not break my heart.
Because I remember there was an episode where we thought Butch was killed just because of the way everything went. And we were like, oh, Butch, no, not Butch. And I was really happy to see in the next episode that we were very wrong and that he was back. And he is that great lieutenant, and he's a great counterpart with her and somebody that really helps balance it. But yeah, I have to admit, I was a little worried too. I was hopeful that, because we've already had Penguin turn, but not, but yes, but no, that I wouldn't see them doing it necessarily again. But I definitely was worried a little bit there myself. And because I've actually grown to really like Butch. It's like, you know, I want to go have some, you know, some spaghetti with you. Because, you know, he's Italian, so you need to go have some spaghetti and a little vino.
But come on, in that scene in the club when Fish was saying, girl gets insecure every once in a while, you know, it was like, Butch, do you see her? Do not break her heart. I swear I am going to cry if you do. And it was like, technically, it wasn't... The stakes weren't all that high if you look at the bigger picture, right? With whether or not Butch will remain loyal to Fish. In the grand scheme of thing, it was like this tiny little cog wheel that was turning, and we shouldn't really care, but oh my God, I was more stressed about his subplot than I was about the main case in Arkham. Like, Butch, do not do this to me. I am begging you. I promise I will be a good person. I will not mock people to their faces, and I don't know, I will give up chocolate for a week. I will do anything, but do not break her heart. Do not break my heart. Please remain loyal, Lieutenant and Minion, because I need you to be a good bad guy.
Well, and I think this episode really did solidify some things like that, because just like we were talking earlier about how we now really see that Jim and Bullock are this buddy cop bromance, just wonder thing, that you have to start seeing where these loyalties are and where these connections are, and that everybody isn't just out for their, you know, for themselves, especially when you're talking about the crime world with all the dons and all this kind of thing. You've really got to see where everybody lies. And Fish was slowly having all of her people defect, and she was starting to be a very lone figure because, you know, she'd lost her little boy toy. Well, she's actually lost two boy toys. She's, you know, Falcone is getting suspicious, and so she was standing alone here. Penguin is gone, and blah blah blah. She needed that rock that's totally with her, I will say that that was probably not a WTF moment, but that was the surprise moment for me, because they built it very well that he looked like, Butch looked like he was, you know, kind of iffy back and forth. What am I going to do? Where do my loyalties lie? And then even at the end, when he gets together with Gonza, that's the character's name, who I guess we've seen before. I don't know. They keep throwing in all these mob bad guys that are there for like 20 minutes.
Let's just face it, we don't care.
I don't know if they were like, Butch and Gonza were brothers or like buddy friends growing up. You know, that he did that whole story with the, when they stole the meat and Butch kept the good stuff. So they obviously had this boyhood history together. And that made me, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, is Butch really going to do this? Is he going to turn on Fish? And it did get me thinking until when he had that moment when Gonza was just like, yeah, I accept your apology. I was like, oh, no. Okay. Accepting the apology, you're dead. Sorry. And so I knew that the gunshot was coming, but it was a nice moment for Butch. I really appreciated that.
I did too. And I wanted to, I wanted to hug him because he did not disappoint me. He did not break my heart. That's more important in everything. So it was like, oh, okay. You can stay. We like you again. Even though you made me worry and stress over whether or not you will be loyal to Fish, you can stay. You can stay.
I did like it. So even though we didn't get a lot of Fish, I think we actually got a good part of her story.
Yeah, and it was the most emotional one for me, at least.
Yeah, even more than the mother and the... Well, I don't know, losing our little boy toy, our little cabana boy wannabe. I think that was kind of sad. But for a totally different reason.
Yeah. But what I liked about this particular sub storyline was that all this happened to Fish without her even knowing. And that left such an impact on me.
And it's good that she doesn't know.
That was, you know, yeah, because that way she will never, she will not doubt Butch as she would if she knew. But it was like, wow, so much can happen to you without you even realizing it. And that only drove home the fact that there is so much happening around her that she is not privy to. And she is playing the game without having all that information that she needs. It was good. I appreciate it. I liked it.
That's a good point to bring up, because that is something that even Jada Pinkett Smith has talked about, how Fish is playing this game, but it's not the game she should be playing. She doesn't realize the game that she should be playing. And when we had that flashback with Penguin, where we saw what really happened between Penguin and Falcone, so that we now know what's going on there. And she thinks she knows, but she doesn't really know. And so she thinks she knows how that relationship is. And that's a detrimental one to her, because, you know, Penguin is getting the goods on her with Liza and getting closer to Falcone and all that kind of stuff. So that's detrimental to her, but she doesn't know about it. Here's one where we saw what was actually beneficial to her. That it's good that she never knows, because if she knew about this whole thing with Butch and what's his name, she might start doubting Butch. But she doesn't need to.
And she needs Butch. Yeah.
So it really solidifies Butch in her corner. And I think that's a good part of the game. So at least our little Fish is not going to be all alone. Okay, anything else on this episode?
No, I think we covered everything in detail.
We did. Yeah, it's been a month. We haven't talked to each other. Next week we have What the Little Bird Told Him, which the synopsis is, in an attempt to get his job back, Gordon seeks to capture Jack Gruber, so your Christopher Heyerdahl will be coming back for that, a deranged electrical genius who escapes Arkham Asylum. Meanwhile, Falcone struggles to hold on to his empire after Fish Mooney makes her next move. Dun dun dun.
Ooh. Dun, dun,
so it sounds
dun.
Like this is going to be good. We're going to be having some action on the streets kind of thing with the whole Gruber, but Jim's still not going to be out of Arkham, so we're still going to have some sort of Arkham connection. And we're going to get some Falcone again, because I missed Falcone in this episode. I like I like Falcone. We got Maroni in place of him. But we're going to get some Falcone fish action going as well. So hopefully that will be entertaining.
We'll see. I can't wait for next week.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for our first podcast of 2015. Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes using the link on our website and follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. If you want to tell us what you think, you can also email us sci-fi for chicks@sci-fi4me.com or call the hotline at 573-427-2434, aka 573-42-SCI-FI. And make sure to check out all the great shows and posts over on sci-fi4me.com, including the Rogues Gallery, a podcast talking about DC, since we also have our Marvel podcast. This is no relation to this episode of Gotham, but I'm sure they will be talking about this episode. Maybe. And you're going to have to just check it out to see. I will be hopefully joining 11D7 for a few weeks doing Agent Carter, so definitely check that out. Let's see how Agent Carter does in promoting female leads here. Their tagline was, sometimes the best man for a job is a woman. I agree.
So true.
And we'll also want you to check out our series that is starting this year, The F Word. No, not that F Word. We're going to be talking about females in genre. And Alex is just ready to talk more about this. She's just chomping at the bit, making all sorts of topics for us. So you've been warned. You've been warned. No comment, Alex? We will be back next week.
No. Because I know what you're doing. You want me to rant, and I will not. Because I promised I would not be ranting too much if Butch didn't break Fish's heart, and he didn't. So I will be a good girl this week.
We will be back next week for another episode of Gotham, which I'm sure, with the way Gotham's track record is going, there will be something that Alex will want to rant about. She's just still in a good mood from the holidays. Alex, thank you so much, and thank you to our listeners. We couldn't and wouldn't do it without you. Actually, we could do it without you, but we wouldn't.
Yeah. Keep telling yourself that.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. You're listening to SciFi for Me Radio.